Dave Acosta.
We didn't discuss if there were questions or not, but I'm happy to entertain any questions. Linda Oppen was their primary translator, and he makes at one point in one of the interviews that he displaces the fact by insisting on his fluency in French. So he was probably capable of understanding some Spanish, but was not in a position to actually speak it much, and sort of made references to it in some of the later interviews. This is one of the questions. The world that they seem to have inhabited, even within, say, the blacklisted Hollywood exile community, was quite marginal. So it seems that the world was quite isolated between the home, the household, the workshop, the occasional visit to the art classes, and the occasional visit of some friends or friends that lived in Mexico with them, like Jean Rouvenal and Hugo Butler, but with whom also relations strained at some point as well. So you read it, for example, in comparison to other US exiles at the same time, and I highly recommend this book by Rebecca Schreiber, for example, and it's a completely different story. Most of the exiles, US exiles in Mexico, were deeply involved in the artistic formations of Mexico, and not so the case with the Oppens. And so the generous reading would be that, you know, Oppen arrived having been wounded in battle in World War II. Linda Oppen, his daughter, refers to it as a kind of post-traumatic stress disorder. They're being followed by the FBI. They are being followed by the Mexican intelligence as well. So there's a kind of mix between a kind of evasion of being involved in many sort of the activities and creating a kind of hideaway. It is remarkable that for 9 years that the engagement was not more robust or intense. I mean, that's what remains the kind of the unknowable. And of course, that there's in the interviews a kind of disavowal of that period. Ramon. Some of them are, and Peter Nichols has done some of the reading of the FBI files. Others have not been opened. So you can read, for example, Rebecca Schreiber in that book has looked at the FBI files to some of the other exiles who are under surveillance by the FBI. But because the Oppens were, I mean, the other thing is, for all intents and purposes, he was no longer an artist, right? So he wasn't identified as a writer, and already time had passed from 1934, so many of his, maybe some of his intimate friends didn't even know that he had published Discrete Series in 34, right? So there's also the sense that he's kind of undercover as an artist, or that there's not a public sense of his persona as an artist.
Can you, I know this is too speculative, but what do you think about the lack of learning Spanish and this, the kind of craft, high commodity, sort of ad hoc modernism that you're describing? How do those things fit together or cancel one another out?
Not having the language skills doesn't mean that he wasn't interacting in some kind of way, right? So that it seems to me that one can make some more plausible speculative remarks in the fact that he was viewing the visual culture of the moment, and that an intense knowledge of the language would not have been necessary for him to know the debates or even to engage to a certain degree. But I think what you're asking is more theoretical, and that's an interesting question, which I like, which is, to what degree does the displacement of language lead to a sort of more heightened engagement with this kind of mid-century modernity, right? Which is why I use the Geritz as a kind of counter to it, because Geritz did learn, I mean, was basically writing in Spanish and became, is considered a Mexican artist, right? So he's a kind of foil for thinking about the possibility of how one emerges, can emerge oneself and become a Mexican artist despite being a foreigner. And that, but that, that plastic poem serves as a kind of correlative to the ways in which one experiences being in a linguistic environment that one can never entirely dominate or be fluid in. I mean, I think an engagement, it's an interesting question, because a further engagement with language might have eased this sort of the austerity of mid-century design, right? And there's a kind of austerity there's a struggle with the idea of austerity in Op, which I'm linking, I think, by analogy to the austerity of mid-century architecture and furnishings. Still an object of a person of interest, right?
Yeah, I was just wondering if the fact that he had kind of was more alienated from the people down there because he had left the party and he really wanted to come back. So
there is references in Mary's Meaning of Life that there was also resistance of being part of the expat community because there's a sense that an autonomy would have been compromised by interacting with that community as well, right? And I think that autonomy was so crucial to them, both physically for safety and for other reasons, and both as practitioners of the art. I mean, it seems the writing in Mary's Meaning of Life is very much that of an, I mean, it's written in retrospect, so there's always this upstreaming, but the sense is that they never disavowed the lifestyle of artists.
It does seem as if there's a real analogy between his refusal to write for the Communist Party and his refusal to join in the expatriate community in Mexico City. He and Mary had an understanding of what the reality of practicing on art really was.
Yes. Yes. And I mean, I sense that, so George would have been allergic to the kind of social realism of the muralists, yet he's producing, they're art exercises, but he's producing that kind of figuration in the wood carvings that doesn't have anything to do with the Oppen we know of the materials and thereafter. So there are just these contradictions that are. Mostly,
also.
Yes.
So there is that going on. And a tremendous contradiction because he's not a furniture maker, he's gone into business.
Yes.
And he had rejected that his
father's
understanding of life.
But he considered
so thorough.
But he still calls it the work of the craftsman.
Yes.
Yeah. In the interviews, that's a motif, that it was about protecting Linda, yes. And that, you know, on the other hand, there's a whole other fascinating aspect of this, which are the people that Linda interacted with, who was immediately fluent in Spanish, was friends with the sons of Luis Buñuel, for example. Peter Nichols follows a little bit of this. I can't help but love the idea of Oppen possibly having seen one of my favorite Buñuel films, which is not unlikely, that was called Illusion Travels by Streetcar, which is a wonderful love letter of a kind to Mexico City. It's one of the comedies. Well, thank you. Yeah, thank you so much.